Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Fantasy Team Advice Football Podcast.
Good evening and welcome to the Fantasy Team Advice Football Podcast. This is number 27 or thereabouts, and we should be getting better at these things, but sometimes one never knows. I am your host, David Feld, and we'll be flying solo this evening, so that's a first. Feel free to call in at any point with the guest number, please, and that number is 347-857-1074. A lot has happened today with respect to the landing spots for some of these free agents. And the news is coming in hot and heavy, and it's barely enough to keep up with it. But I've got a handful of favorites that I'd like to discuss. And the first one is Helote Nada to Detroit, replacing Ndamukong Suh for basically half the money. And for years, Detroit has been, well, a little more than the laughingstock of the NFL, right above where usually, you know, Cleveland and Arizona used to reside. But with all the attitude stuff and all the problems and whatever, you know, behavioral on-field issues they were having with Ndamukong Suh, there was really no question as to how great a player he is. And commanding the kind of money he commanded to get what he got from Miami. And it's puts Miami in a little bit of a bind with respect to signing other guys, but they certainly have one of, if not the best, defensive linemen in the league playing for them now, so that should bode well for the future. But what Detroit did was, instead of paying Ndamukong Suh the $17 to $20 million or whatever that contract would have shaken out to have been, they went and gave up something like a fourth or a fifth round or a fourth and a fifth round pick to get Helote Nada off the cap-strapped Baltimore Ravens. And I am, as good as Ndamukong Suh is, I am hard-pressed to think that he's that much better, certainly not twice the money better, than Helote Nada. And you know, while stats sometimes tell the story, they don't always tell the true picture of what really goes on with respect to how valuable a guy he is. But I am sure Baltimore is trying to do everything they can to re-sign him. And they got 22 or so million into Joe Flacco. They're overpaying a couple of guys on the defense. I know that they did everything they could to keep Marshall Yanda, the offensive lineman, pretty happy. They were unable to sign Justin Forsett. They were unable to sign Torrey Smith. And those, you know, Torrey Smith is also now in, which is number five on my list, but we could talk about him number two. Torrey Smith has moved on to San Francisco. But getting back to Helote Nada for a second there, the Jim Caldwell team at Detroit looks like it is just performing, you know, last year anyway, it looked like that defense had performed a little bit better than some had expected. And not that it's a surprise that he's able to do that job, but certainly with the personnel and the way they played under Schwartz the year before that, it looked like that defense was going in the wrong direction. How fast that he got that move, fast Caldwell got the needle moving in the right direction for them is really, really something to look forward to. And then they just added an enormous building block to the center of the defense. Yeah, he's got 1 year left on like a, you know, a $9 million deal, and he's going to be asking for a lot more money, but at least it buys him the flexibility. Didn't cost him a lot in draft picks. They've got a stupendous player who, you know, to this point so far hasn't had really much in the way of any kind of attitude issues or whatever it is that's going on. But he's just to beat the band with. I mean, he played phenomenal against the in the playoffs. I thought against the Patriots, he was awesome. But he's I look for Detroit to be in really good shape going forward here, and it looks like it's they're not going to miss Ndamukong Suh all that much, which is good for them. My second favorite one was Jimmy Graham to the, I'm going to say Torrey Smith. Let's move on from that because this is a bigger deal. Jimmy Graham to the Seahawks for the $10 million he makes now gives Russell Wilson a legit top-tier target. And I don't know if Jimmy Graham was a function of everything that was malfunctioning in New Orleans last year or if he is just kind of like on his own now. Is, you know, he's away from a situation that maybe he wasn't all that happy with, and the offensive line wasn't playing well. Drew Brees wasn't playing well, and it just looked like they had a lot of problems in New Orleans last year. And again, another situation where they didn't have to give up an unbelievable amount for him. I know they're taking on a big contract, but certainly they have the room. They didn't have to spend the gigantic bucks to get Jimmy Graham. And now he's on his way to Seattle to play with Russell Wilson, who all of a sudden now has an absolute top-tier target, whether it's fantasy or otherwise, or, you know, certainly for real football as well, has a top-tier target that he is going to be looking for on a fairly regular basis. So I think this makes life a little easier for guys like Doug Baldwin, makes life a little easier for the other tight end who's going to be called on to come and help block, because that's not Jimmy Graham's forte. His forte seems to be catching the ball. I don't know how much of the issues from last year came into play when they were interviewing for him, but it doesn't look like they gave up a whole hell of a lot to get him. So it appears that Seattle is in much, much better shape than they were at the start of the day here. So I'm looking forward to seeing that dynamic. I think Russell Wilson is one of the best players in the league, and that could be really something. He could be back doing 60. Jimmy Graham, I mean, could be back doing 16 points a game fantasy-wise, and everybody would just be, you know, jumping up and down and what have you. If that's the case, because a lot of teams, we fielded an episode about 3-4 weeks ago where a couple people were upset about possibility of having to cut him in a medium-sized keeper league. Obviously, in Dynasty, you know, he's one of the higher-priced assets. But there's a couple of guys making the case to bail on him last year, and I was just like, I'll take him in any situation. And now it looks like, you know, the situation offensive line-wise and probably quarterback-wise is a bit more stable now in Seattle than it was for him in New Orleans. And he's also, you know, he still remains in the dome. Yes, it's a tougher division, there's no question, defensive wise, but I'm looking for Jimmy Graham to do big things there. And hopefully reestablish himself what he was 2 years ago, not last year, where it was like an 8-point guy in a standard scoring league. Probably did a little better in PPR, but nobody pays any close mind to that. I'm just kidding for all those PPR people, but not too many people are paying that close attention as they are in standard leagues necessarily, where there's only one tight end starting. Anyway, the number three, the Niners, signed Torrey Smith here. Looks like they signed him for about 4 years, and that gives them some badly needed, not only speed, but gives them legitimacy at wide receiver. Michael Crabtree just hasn't been the same player he was in, you know, forever. And since the Achilles tear anyway, or since he got banged up in the year that they played Baltimore in the Super Bowl, I think that he's been on a drop-off since then. And I'm not sure how much the leg has come into play, but he does not have the explosion he had before it. That's just what it looks like to me. I could be wrong, but anyway, looks like Torrey Smith here has signed a 4-year deal, and they're going to pay him $22 million of it guaranteed. The contract's for $40 million, so that makes him a $10 million guy. So he's basically getting paid what Randall Cobb is getting paid. If you ask me, I'd rather have Randall Cobb than Torrey Smith. But Torrey's a pretty good player. Now he goes from Joe Flacco to Colin Kaepernick, and he's going to be the guy. He's going to have, you know, limited to no help over there, unless Vernon Davis can reestablish. But it looks like Torrey Smith has chased the money and found it. Went to a team that has a need, even though the Niners seem to be sliding backwards last couple of years anyway. With respect to performance levels, they just lost a huge player on defense, announced his retirement. I believe Patrick Willis is out of here now, which is, you know, shocking. But, yep, there it is. He signed Torrey Smith, 5 years, $40 million, and the deal contains $22 million guaranteed. And I guess that's another one of those deals that has been in place for a few days. And it just, you know, they had to wait till today to announce everything. Kaepernick's got the arm, and Torrey Smith's got blazing speed, and I think that that's going to be a pretty darn good dynamic. Normally, Torrey Smith goes off the board and redraft league somewhere in that, you know, late third to early sixth round kind of deal. And I'm not sure that that's going to get, well, it probably will get bumped up. Probably late second you could look to find him. I think that will probably be a pretty good spot to look for him now. I think that elevates him to like the automatic 10-point guy with 12-point upside. Correct me if I'm wrong. Call me crazy if you want, but that's just what I think of the guy. I really like him. I always thought he was a very, very good football player. And, well, it looks like somebody had tried to call in but then bailed. Did I miss it? I didn't look at the studio. Sorry, guys. And, yeah, Torrey Smith was ranked like 16th last year. And I would look for him to be an easy 12-point guy, this year. If anybody's got a disagreement with that, give me a call, or if you're in my league, call me and make a trade for him, because a 12-point wide receiver in our league is worth a little more than a mid- to low-round first pick. So anybody want to give me a call? Go right ahead. Number four is Darrelle Revis is back with the Jets, and all of a sudden that looks like it has the makings of being, once again, a pretty darn good defensive backfield. Antonio Allen gets to move back to safety. The rookie from last year, Calvin Pryor, was struggling a bit, and I think that's attributable to having to cover an enormous amount of territory in front of some very, very bad cornerbacks who were, you know, mostly converted safeties and practice squad players after they lost everybody that they lost in training camp to injuries and whatnot. So I think that Calvin Pryor will improve because of this. I think Antonio Allen gets a breather to move back to his natural spot at safety. I think the Jets as a team don't have to panic or overreach for a guy to play one. They have their legitimate one back. Now they can wait for Dexter McDougal recovering from the ACL from camp last year to get better and hopefully win that starting job. And they also signed, I believe they just signed, they signed Buster Skrines. Yeah, I think that's a done deal from Cleveland, who was actively, you know, playing a lot of significant minutes for the Browns last year because they, whatever was going on with Justin Gilbert was going on with Justin Gilbert, and then Joe Hayden got hurt. So he saw significant minutes, and Todd Bowles thought enough of him, thought enough of Skrines anyway, to try and make a reach for him. If he doesn't start at two, then the Jets look like they've got themselves a pretty darn good nickelback. So that has the potential to be something really, really good. And I'm totally happy with, if I'm a Jet fan, I'm actually jumping up and down about it. But as a football fan, I'm kind of glad he went back home. You know, yes, he was chasing the money. Yes, it was left a bad taste in everybody's mouth the way the deal was done from both sides there. And fans were unhappy. The owners were unhappy. The managers were unhappy. Everybody was unhappy when he left. And he got himself healthy and wanted to come back. The owner still had that bitter thing going on, didn't want to take him back. And he just wound up winning a Super Bowl with New England, which, you know, doesn't sit well with Jet fans necessarily. I have one brother that's crying anyway. But now he's back home, and he says he's happy to be there, so we shall see. That could be something that, you know, with that front seven that the Jets can line up against you there with a deep, you know, with a cornerback that you don't have to worry about necessarily at all covering anybody. I mean, he's going to get beat once in a while, but whatever. That could be something that may just elevate the Jets back into the conversation of fantasy-relevant defenses. Again, I would like to hear from some of you guys out there talk about it. I keep pushing over to the studio, but no one's in there. Anyway, there's probably like one other person on the planet listening to this. Hi, honey. Thanks for chiming in. I'm just kidding. Anyway, my my fifth one, my fifth favorite one, is Shane Vereen going to the Giants. It gives them another serious weapon added to. Giants probably had other needs, but Shane Vereen gives them a serious weapon out of the backfield to catch the pass. I think that they saw a little bit of struggling action from Andre Williams, who looks to be relatively moderately kind of sort of stiff in the passing game, just to be nice there. And I don't know what they expect anymore going forward production-wise from Rashad Jennings. He's a good player, you know, excellent, trustworthy guy, but not necessarily that home run hitter when he has the ball in his hands, where Shane Vereen, when he catches the ball, certainly is a home run hitter. So that looks like that's going to work, because he'll be out there in the pattern running around, and you'll have Odell Beckham out there in the pattern running around, and hopefully the tight end, Mr. Donald, can get his act back together again and, you know, have more than a couple of good games and hang on to the football. And if Victor Cruz can get back from that torn patella, and Ruben Randall can give him, you know, one more inconsistent year before he departs, I think this Giant offense, it's going to be is going to be gangbusters again. You know, Eli finished that year last year as top quarterback in football for the past four weeks of the season. And Odell Beckham, not only running away the best rookie offensive player last year, but probably the best receiver down the stretch last year as well. I can't think of another, you know, it was Jordy and Dez. And I can't think of another guy. Maybe Odell Beckham did finish first overall for receivers the last 4 or 5 weeks of the season. And that looks like that's going to be something. So little turning, you know, putting on my fantasy hat here for a minute and turning my attention to what I think is going to be quite a dynamic paradigm shift in the way we draft our fantasy teams this year, whether you're, you know, keeper or dynasty. We could talk, you know, keeper dynasty for a moment, and I'm talking about like more than like 6-7 keepers, like call it 6, because by that point the rookies become super, super important. And in a 12-team league anyway, maybe 7, and the rookies are definitely number one, because starting with the 7 keeper. And guys like Eli Manning and Joe Flacco and quarterbacks like that, those middle tier that are normally the middle tier guys, those guys don't get picked up until, you know, we go, I'll wait on my quarterback, and then you get a guy who, you know, like Flacco or Eli, who'll put up, you know, 15 to 18 points in a standard scoring league, and then you're just, you know, your team is loaded with all these other great players, and maybe you can get by with that. And if he hits the hot hand down the stretch and they're making a playoff push and he's playing well, then you get, you know, the added bonus out of that. But I think you could make this, you know, Ben Roethlisberger's already vaulted himself into that category of fantasy dynasty keeper. Well, dynasty for sure, but, you know, keeper league, keep, you know, he's a keeper in like a smaller dynasty format. Like, we're only keeping 6 or 7 guys. I think that he's in the conversation of being kept there now. I mean, he's able to find, you know, he's got the receivers to do it with. He's got the line protecting him and a running back to beat the bandwidth. So I think they're looking pretty good. And I think that's what's happening in New York right now. So yeah, this is the long-winded version of telling you that Eli very well may be a keeper in a 6-team league. In a 6-keeper league where you can only keep 6 guys. So, you know, obviously depending on what the rest of your roster is, but I think the arrow's pointing up. He's 31 now, Eli, or 32, and he's just had the best season he's had in years. He's got a player he loves to throw the ball to. He knows how to get him open. He knows how to, not only does he know how to find him when he's open, but he knows how to throw him open. Now he's got a running back to do the same thing with. I think that the Giant offense is going to be pretty good this year. So I mean, the defenses in the NFC East don't really do that much for me. Yes, few people, that this is not your father's / grandfather's NFC East. So, you know, there's no more Lawrence Taylor, no more Harry Banks, no more Dirty Waters in Philadelphia, no more Jerome Brown. Well, sorry about that. Or Reggie. You know, there's no players like that playing at that level anymore. Not even close. So it's not even close to what the NFC East used to be, and these defenses are pretty darn weak. It looks like the Cowboys are going to go through this season with pretty much no defense. And unless they get Sean Lee back, they'll at least have one guy. I'm not sure what they're expecting out of the backfield there. I mean, Skandrick's a pretty decent safety. They have at least, I always forget that one defensive lineman's name. He's actually pretty good. They drafted in the middle round, turned out to be a solid player. So maybe up the middle they could be a little tougher, but boy, the Dallas defense is going to be extra weak this year. They just don't have the money to do anything else unless they draft perfectly like they did with their line over the last couple of years. I don't see the Cowboys being anything but, you know, able to be pushed around on defense pretty hard. And the Giants haven't shown much in the way of improvement either. I mean, they signed the linebacker, but I don't know if it's definitely an upgrade. That was probably a backup level for most teams, but he's going to start on the Giants because their linebackers were so bad last year. See if Jason Pierre-Paul can pull it back together. I think all of the defenses in that division are on the back end. They're very, very weak. And if the Washington Redskins lose Brian Arakpo, and it's just, I don't see it happening. Sorry, you know. I focus power on the NFC East offenses, and I think that will lead to fantasy success this year. That's kind of what I'm saying there. Excuse me. But Eli throwing it to Shane Green, getting out of that backfield, I could see it happening. I could see that working. The field gets stretched by the receivers, and Shane Green sneaking around underneath, takes out a little bit late from the backfield, turns around, catches a pass, goes for 20 yards, runs out of bounds. I could absolutely see that happening all day long with the New York Giants, and looks pretty good. And speaking of the NFC East offenses for a moment, and I think they're all of them, maybe even Washington's, but all of them, the Dallas Giant and the Philadelphia Eagle offenses will all be good. And I think Philadelphia will hit that mark even without a real quote-unquote elite quarterback, whatever that is. It's not my guy. It's probably not your guy unless you root for one of four teams. But anyway, it looks like Nick Foles and Sam Bradford have swapped spots. And I never was a Foles guy. Coming out of college, I remember watching that interview he did with Gruden in the classroom. And not that Gruden had necessarily pointed it out to, you know, embarrass him or anything, and it really wasn't a major topic of it. But Nick Foles appears unaware. I just don't think that he is paying attention. I think that even last year he got knocked on his backside on a play where he threw an interception, or there was a fumble, or whatever was going on. He's jogging over towards the play, has no idea what's going on, and somebody came and knocked him down. They threw the flag and gave a penalty, and I'm thinking that they should reward that guy because he could have absolutely ended Nick Foles' career, and for whatever reason, chose to lay up on him. He just basically just shouldered him and knocked him to the ground. They threw the flag with whatever. And I'm thinking that Nick Foles is running around there. He's not even paying attention. He's like jogging over to the play. Like, what's he going to do, tackle somebody? I mean, seriously. And so I thought that level of unawareness, plus the fact that even when he started to get healthier again, they decided to leave Sanchez in, who's just not good. Sanchez is not a good quarterback. Mark Sanchez is not a good quarterback. They chose to leave Sanchez in even when Foles was recovering. So this is an upgrade for the Eagles in talent, but it may be a downgrade in durability. But that may not necessarily be so, because Nick Foles, with his level of unawareness, is susceptible to a hard hit / concussions, and we all know how that's going. But he'll be playing indoors in a dome behind a very bad offensive line. They cut their center. They cut Jake Long. I think that Chip Kelly is just saying, good luck, Nick. Thanks for the memories. This is the direction I'm going in. Yes, I know I know Sam Bradford gets injured basically every other time he gets tackled or sacked, and it's career threatening / season ending. But I'm still going in this direction because when this line's pretty good and we keep him upright, and I think that's going to work. I really do. They lost Jeremy Maclin. Jordan Matthews is going to be fine. I think Josh Huff is going to be fine. The two tight ends are, well, Zach Ertz is excellent, and Brent Celek's pretty good. And I believe they're still on the teams. Who knows these? I mean, in that last 20 minutes they were, or last half hour, they were definitely on the teams. And I think that's gonna work pretty darn good for Chip Kelly. He just figures it out. He has a great offensive line, and the running backs are going to be fine also. This is a guy who knows how to run an offense. We've been watching. They run 70 plays a game. He gets first downs. They score a lot. And I think he's just looking for a little bit more of that magic formula, and then he's off to the races. So that would be the takeaway from this show, that the offenses in the NFC East are going to be fantasy-worthy, and Eli, to the point where Eli Manning, yes, folks, Eli Manning may even be a keeper. As a matter of fact, going into next year, going into this 2015 season, I'd rather have Eli Manning as my quarterback than Peyton Manning as my quarterback. Go ahead and make the case. Otherwise, you can always blog an answer to that comment, whether you think it's sensible, a little reaching, or totally ridiculous. I would love to hear from you if you'd like to do that. And that pretty much is what I have for this evening. So that wraps up the show, and thanks for those or that one person who may or may not have been listening for the entire time. And you have yourself a great evening, and we'll talk to you next week. Remember, fantasyteamadvice.com. Thank you very much, and have a good evening. Bye.